McGuinness and Aaron S. Lee. This is the show about swim, bike and run and everything else in the world of sport that tickles your fancy. We're producing for Radio Sydney and Australian Broadcasting Media, but on this edition, we're recording live from the Giro d'Italia, the second of the three, well, the second biggest of the three Grand Tours of cycling, and after the Tour de France, and the third one is the Vuelta a España. But as I said, it's all about the Giro d'Italia. We're into the second week of this year's race, the 99th edition. Nine stages have been raced. They've been won and lost, and we've seen some pretty interesting results. On this edition, we've got back with us through popular demand, Gregor.
Very popular demand.
Our guest has already just interrupted, but through popular demand, Gregor Brown, who's a correspondent for Cycling Weekly and Velo News. And we've also got a special interview with Orica Green Edge head sports director Matt White, who will give us a review on how their Giro has unfolded, both from with a view to their sprinter Caleb Ewan from Sydney and also for their overall contender Esteban Chavez. But with me on the line now is my cohort in crime, Aaron S. Lee. Aaron, how are you doing, mate? And how you been following the Giro from over there in New Orleans?
Oh yeah, thanks for reminding me that I'm not there. But yeah, and welcome back to the show, Gregor. Always good to have you on. I think I just got disconnected.
You're with us live, Aaron S. Lee. So tell us, you're over there in New Orleans, and you know, obviously, you're following the Giro because I've read your reports for Eurosport Australia, but at the same time, there's the Tour of California over there. So what's your take, and how are you following it there? I mean, you've got to be following cycling 24 hours of the day.
Well, I think it's very exciting. Of course, you're leaving out the tour of Iran. The former tour of Azerbaijan is also underway. The last I saw, Peter Koenig from Drap Packet was on the podium. I can't recall if that was for a stage or for the race, the GC. But a lot of racing going on. And, of course, yesterday, the Tour of California kicked off. It looked like to be an exciting finish with the world champion, Peter Sagan, clipping former Drap Packet rider, a new Cannondale Neo Pro Walter Whippet, right there at the finish line. I saw some social media posts last night from Whippet, who is quite excited, I think, to come in so closely second to the world champion. So a lot of racing going on. We're kind of getting into the meat of the season, aren't we? A lot of things going on, a lot of excitement. If you're a cycling fan, no matter where you are in the world, whether it be the Southern Hemisphere, Asia Pacific, Australia, New Zealand, or, of course, North America and Europe, it's just a great time to be alive, so to speak.
Yeah, actually, just triggering my memory just of a couple of days ago when Gregor Brown, our special guest, and I were at the start of the stage, I think seven, and when it was finishing in Foligno, and then we were chatting about the race, and we bumped into Gianni Savio, and we asked him, or his Italian sports director with his team Androni, and we asked him about the Giro, just like I asked you, and he told us all about his team racing in the 4 days of Dunkirk.
Yeah.
that's a little take on you there, Aaron. No, but tell me, Aaron, you've seen the Giro unfold now. Who do you think is in the best position of the overall contenders?
I think everyone's looking at has done such a great job that first week, and a bit of a surprise. Bob Jungels has come out of nowhere. He's been a lot of talk in the local cycling community about the edX Quick Step rider, and I'm still kind of I kind of like Valverde. I don't know why. There's just something about him this year in the race and the development of the team, and I loved your piece the other day on Roy Sutherland, and your heart has to go out to that veteran from Australia and the job that he and his teammates are doing for the former Vuelta a España winner. I don't know. I think it's still anyone's race. I think it's still very early. I think we're still surprised that Nibali is not really being mentioned at the moment. Obviously, he had some issues there towards the latter part of the week with his team car. But I think it's still a little bit close to call, at least from my perspective. You guys are on the ground, so I'd love to hear what you guys think.
Well, that's a good segue to Gregor Brown, who's with us now. So, Gregor, what's your feel, mate? Who do you think is in the box seat for this year's Giro, but who can possibly give the best challenge to that person in the box seat?
Well, we'd be silly not to talk about Vincenzo Nibali, who's put all the cards on the table for the Giro d'Italia this year, and it could be his parting gift for Astana. As everybody's heard, he's linked to the Bahraini team for 2017. He's going to be ready and supercharged for the final third week, as was evident in that time trial yesterday, and also was evident with Zakarin until the final kilometers when it just all fell apart for poor Zakarin. He was going to be the dark horse for this Giro d'Italia. Nibali is the favorite, but after yesterday's time trial with Mikel Landa, who raced with Astana last year to a third overall behind Alberto Contador and his own teammate Fabio Aru, now my heart kind of pulls for Mikel Landa in a way. He pulled out a great time trial yesterday, and showed that the training over the winter paid off. And then in the mountains, he should set the race on fire and provide a good duel with Vincenzo Nibali and with Aaron S. Lee's pick, Alejandro Valverde, who, as Aaron mentioned, the team is super strong. With the way they put two men up the road the other day for the stage over the white gravel climb there to an Arezzo and the descent back down, and Alejandro had two teammates up the road, and that was perfect. Perfect racing by Movistar and Alejandro. What do you think, guys?
Look, Greg, I think you've nailed it, and Aaron as well. You know, saying that Valverde, I believe he is the biggest threat to the guy who is seen as the favourite, Vincenzo Nibali. Earlier today, Aaron, I was talking with Gregor, and I still have a feel about, you know, as a challenge for the podium. I still think Esteban Chavez is looking very good, because that time trial before the time trial, Matt White, the head sports director of Orica Green Edge, who we're going to listen to later, he did forecast that he would be happy if it was if his time lost in the time trial would be about 2 minutes. So he's looking around there. They're obviously very confident about Chavez's ability once we get to the pointy end, literally, of the Giro.
Yeah, but Esteban did not look too happy with his day there yesterday when we saw him sitting there on the bus's steps. His eyes were a bit watery. I'm not sure if that was the Chianti rain that kind of got underneath his aero helmet and into his eyes, or if it was the tears that filled him up after his time trial performance. I don't know. And Esteban's going to have to really, really pull out his climbing legs to make up that deficit now he has to the virtual Magliarosa Vincenzo Nibali.
Well, I think it's a natural. That's a natural emotion to think in any event. You know, obviously, team directors sort of calculate what they think can be won and lost on time to try and keep a realistic sort of scope over how they're going to approach the race tactically. But if you're an athlete, you know, you're not going into a race to lose time, are you? So I think it's a positive sign that someone is disappointed. Aaron, now, you've known Matt White for a long time. I mean, we're going to hear from him after the break. I had a chat to him about how the landscape of things went after nine stages. Another rider who you do know well, Caleb Ewan from Australia in the sprints. You've known Caleb for a long time, and you've seen his career progress. How do you feel he's tracking? I mean, obviously he hasn't got a stage win yet, but I think a lot of people may not understand how hard it is to get a stage win in the Giro. Just because he won a stage in the Vuelta doesn't mean that's going to transfer to the Giro. But what's your take on Caleb's race so far?
Well, you're spot on, Rube. Obviously, the Giro is a completely different race than the Vuelta. I was kind of with Gregor earlier in the week. I think I tipped Caleb to win stage by now. But something that I've seen, and I'm sure you guys have as well, over the last 2 years since Caleb has made that jump up the World Tour, is that he has a tendency to get lost there in the finish. I don't know if it has something to do with size, which I do believe was a huge benefit to him in the under-23s, under-19s, but it seems like he just can't seem to find his way to the front on the finish line, even when his team has had the opportunity to deliver him successfully to the front of the field. I'm not sure. I don't know if that's a lack of confidence or if he just doesn't have that little extra horsepower to get him over the top of these bigger, stronger riders, maybe. But I was figuring that he might be able to sneak in there. Again, most of the time that I've had a chance to really follow Caleb in person, it has been races such as the Tour of Korea, Orlando Cowie, where he has raced against inferior competition.
Okay, well, look, we're going to take a little break now, and we're going to come back after this break, after Aaron, dips into his LP collection and produces another selection of music. But we're going to talk more about the sprinters, because there's been some interesting results in the first week, albeit we're looking towards the second and third week when all the action is going to unfold for the overall classification. But there's been a lot of action going on, so we'll just take a little break, and then we'll come back and talk about life in the fast lane. to What a Ride with Aaron S. Lee and Rupert Guinness and our special guest, Gregor Brown from Cycling Weekly and Velo News.
And as guests always have, they have free drinks. And Rupert, since we're in the area of Chianti, has poured me a tall glass of Chianti wine, some of the finest he could find at the local corner shop after lunch today. Rupert, what type of bottle, what vintage are we drinking here? It looks like 2016.
No, it's a 2014 Valloni di Cecchioni. Have I got the pronunciation right? You're going to tell me if I'm wrong, I know.
Rupert, good enough. I mean, the man at the store there was helpful and recommended this wine because it comes from the local Penzano hillside. And we're just up the climb, the final descent. We're at the top of that final descent that they faced just during that time trial that, you know, left us, put us into the rest day. And here we are on the rest day.
Oh, thanks for clarifying that. We are on the rest day of this year's Giro after nine stages, that we're not actually in the middle of it, of the 10th stage, drinking Chianti. Anyway.
Well, Rupert, I've got to ask, I mean, have you run this past Australian broadcast media's Andy Brown? Because I don't recall you ever getting a food and drink allowance.
Well, that's why I'm here, Aaron, and you're there, and I guess you missed that negotiating tool, you know.
Would be the first meeting that I've missed out on.
Okay, look, we're back. We've been talking about the Giro d'Italia, and we're in the 99th edition of this year's race. And while a lot is yet to unfold in the next couple of weeks, the second and third week of this year's race, a lot has already happened, and we were talking before the break about Caleb Ewan and how he's been tracking. We've just touched on that, but it'd be remiss of us not to talk about the impact that the other sprinters and their teams have had already. We've seen Marcel Kittel win two stages and have the pink jersey, the leader's pink jersey, the Maglia Rosa. We've seen Andre Greipel win two stages in sprints, you know, in superb form, and also his Lotto Soudal team win another stage with Willems winning the stage in superb fashion with a fantastic breakaway on the first uphill finish, or not uphill, summit finish of this year's Giro. Gregor Brown is with us now. Gregor, what's your feel about the impact that, say, Kittel and Greipel have had so far on this race?
Huge, huge, huge. Marcel Kittel has won now, I think, four stages in the Tour of Italy without ever winning a stage in Italy. You remember he won up there in Belfast and in Dublin and two years ago, and now he's won in two stages in Holland before it transferred down to the toe of Italy in Calabria. They made a huge, huge impact, and perhaps Greipel more so with that sprint win on that little uphill finish there where he had the crash of the Katusha rider in that final left-hand bend. He just slid out and fortunately didn't take out anyone else with him. Because he won again. He won a second stage, and then we had Tim Willens winning on Rocca Rasso. So Lotto is extremely happy. And the word is in the Lotto camp, Lotto Soudal camp, is that they want to win even more stages. And so they're hungry. Whereas Etics said, look, Marcel, you've had enough, and they sent him home, you know, because Marcel's going to rest up and come back for the Tour de France. They made a huge impact, and it was just what the race needed with Marcel Kittel winning two stages. Greipel doesn't make the same impact, and I wrote a little bit about that on Velo News last week. He was in the shadows of Mark Cavendish there at High Road HTC, and then now in the shadows in Germany of Marcel Kittel. And people love the tall blonde Marcel Kittel, they really do. And so to have his presence already early on in the Giro d'Italia, along with Tom Dumoulin, another attractive man, not quite as attractive as myself. It's been great for the Giro d'Italia, and that's what the race needed. These big names winning, so their impact has been huge for their teams, but then also for the race overall as it pushes for its own identity in the landscape of cycling. You know, because here we have big names, you have Tom Dumoulin, Marcel Kittel, and yes, Andre Greipel, a name we're all familiar with, winning stages in the Giro d'Italia. It's great for the race.
I was just wondering, Gregor, interesting point though, you know, like it's, I mean, I think you mentioned it in your story that, you know, Greipel, you know, living in the, has his career gone through the shadows of these charismatic headlining sort of sprinters. You know, also you've had Mark Cavendish as well. And, you know, Greipel obviously made a, you know, reference to the fact that, well, you spoke to him, didn't you? You heard him when he when his response to that. Well, what did he actually say? And because there was a bit of a reaction to your story as well, I understand, where people sort of said, you know, hey, he's still a, you know, I guess it's how you interpret his impact. But, I mean, what did he say at that press conference? And what was your take on him?
Well, we cornered him in the hallway outside the press conference, I think, when the other journalists were listening in with Tom Dumoulin. And a colleague of mine asked him, you know, we get this impression in Germany at home that you're not as popular as Marcel Kittel. And he said, you know, well, I'm not out to win any popularity contest. You know, I'm always open for a chat, for an interview. So, you know, he says he's available, but it's just his character, how Greipel comes across, and he's not as accessible or doesn't seem as accessible and friendly as a Marcel Kittel, who has the smile and the big broad shoulders and the blonde hair. And then I put it to Marcel Kittel. I said, I put it to Andre Greipel. I said, well, does it, you know, must help that, you know, Marcel Kittel has his blonde hair and these looks. And he looked back and he said, I'm not going to say he's not attractive, but I don't think I need to hide myself behind a wall either. And so, Andre Greipel is clearly in a good mood with his stage wins, and he's still around, which is more than Kittel and Viviani in this Giro d'Italia. So we could see him win not tomorrow in Sestola, but in some of the days coming up already.
Yeah, perhaps at Bibbiani on stage. Is it perhaps? That's right, Aaron. I was about to say stage 12 to Bibbiani. Aaron, you saw Greipel at the Tour of Turkey, which, you know, him and Adam Hansen used as a important lead into the Giro to get their form. I spoke to Adam Hansen the other day, and he was saying how he has noticed a difference though in Greipel now than at the Tour of Turkey, where he got back to winning. But it's a thing of confidence, you know, when you get that confidence of that winning feel back again, and then you get momentum. Tell us, Aaron, you've seen Greipel at the Tour of Turkey a number of times now. Tell us a bit about his character, because there is an underlying humour there which perhaps a lot of people sort of miss, and perhaps the perception is not really fair on him.
Well, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, obviously we had a chance to just down with Greipel last week at the Tour of Turkey for a story on Bella News, but also for an interview segment for What a Ride, who was as well as Adam Hansen last week as well. You know, Andre was in good spirits. It was immediately following the stage 3 win in Konya. He had suffered a bit of a calf strain, a calf tear inside the first 10 kilometers of stage 1 at Turkey. It put him in a bit of a foul mood for the next 2 days, but he was in good spirits on stage 3, obviously, after the win. We talked a little bit about him missing out on the tour down under the past 2 years, and he laughingly talked about returning to see some wallabies and kangaroos, and he would return down under before his career was over. He was very excited to do that. But, you know, I talked to him a little bit about his age, and maybe was age something that it was playing a bit of a factor for him as he gets a little bit older. I think he's, what, guys, 33, 34 years of age. And of course, as the older you get in athletics, the fast twitch muscles, they dissipate slightly. And but he said that wasn't the case. It was just simply a case of having a really bad year with injury, and obviously being able not to have as much training time leading up, but he felt confident, and the team seemed to be in really good spirits. You know, the thing is about love, you have to kind of like these guys, at least I do. They've got a bit of a blue-collar work ethic. What do you think?
No, I think you're spot on there. I mean, the Lotto Soudal team, they don't, you know, they base their reputation and name on performance rather than, say, the glitz and glamour that can come with some teams, and I like that. I think there's a intrinsic similarity between a lot of their riders. They are similar with that. They don't oversell their image, and they don't boast about what they're going to do or what they've done. You know, I think anybody who's spoken to Adam Hansen would feel that from Australia. But I think that's, you know, when you see the, say, there's a devotion towards Andre Greipel, so to speak, but also in that team, as we've seen with Willems' stage win, I mean, there's opportunity there. And I know for a fact that Adam Hansen is, you know, as Gregor said earlier, how Lotto Soudal, they want to win more stages, but at the same time, it's not just about Greipel winning stages, it's about opportunities for other riders in that team, you know, seizing those opportunities. And I know Adam Hansen's one of those guys who wants to do that.
Yeah, I want to share a story with you guys. I don't think I've ever written about this. I don't think I've mentioned it on air. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, hold on. We're going to be just a second, Aaron. I have to do the alert here. World exclusive.
that's our sound effect budget. It's about as deep as our food and beverage budget as well. No, seriously, I think it was a couple of years ago, sitting and talking with Adam Hansen, who was who's obviously Andre Greipel's roommate while on the road, and I think that does Andre a lot of good. And I remember it was a race. It might have even been last year's Tour of Turkey because Cavendish was there racing for Edex. And I remember Adam saying that sometimes Greipel lacks a bit of confidence, and that Cavendish would purposely leave him out when mentioning his rivals for an upcoming race, and he would get under Andre's skin, and Andre would say to Adam, you know, basically, and I'm paraphrasing all of this, of course, that, you know, well, why does he leave me out? You know, why does he, you know, does he not think I'm a good sprinter? And Adam would say, no, he probably is a fantastic sprinter, and he's doing that to get in under your skin. I think that's the thing about Greipel that maybe we're missing, or I'd like to get your thoughts on, is that maybe he hasn't had, even though he's had a lot of success, he doesn't come across as the most confident sprinter.
That's an interesting point, because I mean, I guess the fact, even like I said earlier, that how Adam mentioned that the big change he's seen between the Tour of Turkey and now is Greipel's confidence. So that's obviously something that swings, you know, from one to the other. Gregor, what do you think about confidence in amongst bunch sprinters? And are there any bunch sprinters who you think are just always confident, and that is not a potential vulnerability for them?
No. Sprinting seems to be a game of confidence, and once you get that stage win, or once you start working up there, as Caleb Ewan's doing, you know, in the sprint finales, the confidence comes, and then you finally reach that win, or you start working your way up there in the bunch sprints in the finals, and you stay, you hover around, you know, a third or fifth, like a Sasha Modulo, or perhaps Viviani in the Giro d'Italia, and that confidence doesn't come, and then it becomes a mind game, as it were. And now we're talking to the director, Rick Van Slick, who I probably produced a few CDs back in his days. Rick Van Slick at Etics Quick Step, and he was just happy to see, you know, Brambilla in the jersey for another day, Jungles nearly taking the jersey by 1 second off of his own teammate, and then of course the two stage wins by Kittel, and so the team is full of confidence, and that helps everybody in the team. And he, you know, Kittel wins two stages, his confidence goes up, and so in a way, at Tim Wellens' win, will vibrate around the team, and Greipel will even feed off of that more for our next sprint stage. And so you'd be a fool to not bet on Andre Greipel for the next sprint stage.
Look, that's interesting. Actually, I liked your reference to Rick Van Slick. You know, sounds like, because you think of his team, you almost have a rock band called Rick Van Slick and the Addicts Quick Steps.
Yeah.
It sounds like a '60s band, doesn't it? But also,
I'll tell you what. Wait, Rube, I'm sorry to cut you off, but if you're gonna go with that, then you have to have some great backup dancers, and I would like to start with Stephanie Clurs.
Actually, but another thing I'd just like to add, you know, what Gregor was just saying, though, with confidence, because it also it passes on to not just the guys who are sprinting. I mean, obviously it passes on to everybody in the team, and you can see with Eddie's Quick Step, you know, with Gianluca Brambilla, who's leading the Giro now, and has for 2 days now, or two stages, you know, his confidence and how way he rode in the time trial, I mean, it does transfer intrinsically between the team. I mean, they're having a fabulous Giro here. Whatever happens now, it's I mean, they're in that purple patch now, where they say each day, whatever happens now, it doesn't matter. We've had a fantastic Giro, and then it goes on. But I tell you what, after the break, we're just going to have a little listen though to Matt White, the head sports director of Orica Green Edge, because as you know, his team has been having a pretty successful Giro, although they haven't actually won anything yet. You know, obviously they won the team time trial last year, and you know, stage wins. You know,
pink jersey.
Oh, the pink jersey as well. Thank you, Gregor. They had the pink jersey. So the success of this Giro for Orica Green Edge could be interpreted in a different way, and it's yet to be seen how it'll unfold, because their overall contender in Esteban Chavez is the card they're playing. But we've said earlier, you know, Caleb Ewan is a work in progress, and we speak to Matt White about all that, about both players, or both, not both players, we're getting wrong sports here, we're cycling, not rugby.
We're all players.
Players of life. Anyway, we're going to take a commercial, not a commercial break. We haven't got a commercial. We're going to take a break. And after the break, we're going to listen to Matt White, the head sports director of Orica Green Edge. You're listening to What a Ride.
Consider this, the hit on the century. Consider this,
I'm speaking with Matt White at the finish of Stage 9, the 40.5-kilometre time trial in the to the town of Chianti. Matt, the race has been won and lost. Some people have lost a lot of time. Some people have crashed. Just first up, what is the fallout, excuse the word, the fallout of today's stage from your perspective with Esteban Chavez?
Yeah, look, I'm very happy with today's result. The actual result on the stage is irrelevant for the general, but the time he lost against the best general classification riders is exactly in the ballpark where I would have liked, under 2 minutes. It was a time trial that was, you know, pretty hard to design, a worse one for Esteban. A lot of descending, more descending than climbing, and for a guy who's 55 kilograms and not a time trial specialist, he's done very, very well.
He did reconnaissance of the course before this Giro, but I assume when you did reconnaissance it wasn't raining like it was here. What sort of instructions did you give him before the race and also during the race to where he could get the best time possible, but at the same time not take too many risks?
Yeah, so Esteban saw the course in March, and then I did it with him this morning in the dry, maybe 2 hours before the start. And we made a call this morning that if it was going to be wet, that there was no need to take any unnecessary risks today, because he's got great form on the climbs, and there's lots and lots of stages where he can peg back time. But you crash today, you hurt yourself, you can finish your Giro. So it certainly wasn't worth taking any unnecessary risks.
To the layman out there who may see he's dropping in the result overall from 6th down to 13th, that can be a misinterpretation of where he really is standing as the mountains approaching. What would you say to people who have seen that drop in place?
It's one day. We've got a long way to go, and the Giro hasn't even started yet. We've got some very, very tough mountain stages coming up, and I'm very, very happy with the position we're in so far.
Now, with Esteban, the rest day coming up, obviously rest day is good for a ride, and I guess mentally to regroup and see where you're at and plan for the second week of this Giro. Do you have anything that may be changed as a result of what we've seen in the first week?
No, I think now all the stages a lot more accommodating for him. You know, that was always going to be crucial today. But, you know, the next time trial is a hill time trial, which is going to suit the pure climbers, which he's one of. But, look, we've got a long, long way to go, a lot of climbing, and I think the weather's going to have a big factor on the outcome of this race as well.
With his Colombian background, he's a rider who, I guess, he's trained a lot in Colombia. How can the potential conditions of a Giro, with the fluctuating weather that we've seen, but particularly in the north and the mountains, how can that impact his performance potentially?
Well, the biggest benefit for him is on the stages that go to high altitude here. Now, he lives at 2,600 metres. The highest we go is 2,700, and not too many riders are used to riding that high. Mm-hmm. Whether we go that high will be very much weather determined. But on the high mountain stages, for example, we've got a stage next Saturday, six times over 2,000 metres. Mm-hmm. So for a guy who lives and trains at that altitude, it's a big, big benefit.
So really the sense of mood amongst the Orica Green Edge, yourself and Esteban and his teammates, is really a calm sort of confidence, and maybe with a little bit of relief that today has not been a result that maybe someone like Zacharin, who had a few falls, experienced.
Yeah, no, there is a hell of a lot of relief. It was a stage that could have gone wrong at any given second for any GC guy taking risks today, and I'm happy with where we are.
Tell us for yourself, in that time trial, when you're going down those descents, I know when we were on the course and we weren't even following riders, but I'm just thinking the potential risks that you could face. What was going through your mind and in your heart, and perhaps other areas of your body at that time?
There was a couple of the corners I couldn't watch. I wasn't driving the car, but I couldn't watch. It was pretty nerve-wracking, because he'd done such a good time trial, and there was a couple of moments there where you could see the back wheel slip a little bit, but there was a couple of corners I just put my head down.
And just a quick word of another young guy, or not, Caleb Ewan, who's obviously here for a lot of experience, but he seems to be making progress in the sprints. Working well with Luca Mezjek, his lead out man as well. Thursday stage 12, his next opportunity. How do you think he's going to be able to put what he's learnt from the Giro so far into practice in Thursday?
Look, I think the two of them are growing in confidence. and what he's going to take out of the Giro, whenever he does stop the Giro, he's going to take a hell of a lot of strength for the next part of the season. Yeah, he's got races 2 or 3 weeks after here, and a busy summer, and I think the block he's going to get here will serve him well for the rest of the season.
For a sprinter and his lead-out rider, they very much have to work in unison and anticipate each other's moves. It's almost like having dance partners. Would you put them in Dancing with the Stars just yet?
No, there'd be the odd couple of those two. I think it's about a foot and a half difference in height between them. But look, it's not only those two, it's the guys in front of them that are, you know, Sam and Heppy, yep, haven't had too much experience working in that role specifically. And you know, it might, Luca is the last guy you see, but there's also other guys who play an important role, and getting that four guys together and the timing, that's the big thing, timing and confidence.
Okay, Matt White, thanks for talking to What a Ride, and all the best for the rest of the day, and we're looking forward to weeks 2 and 3.
Still a long, long way to go.
Welcome back to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee, and our special guest, Gregor Brown. We've just been listening to Matt White, the head sports director of Orica Green Edge, talk about his team's progress in this year's Giro, the 99th Giro d'Italia. Obviously, he spoke about Esteban Chavez and his pursuit of the best of the overall classification. But he made some interesting comments there about Caleb Ewan, their young Australian sprinter, 21-year-old, second year, was in his second full year as a professional. And obviously, Caleb, he feels Caleb's been making a lot of progress in this year's race, even though he hasn't got the stage when they'd hoped for yet, but he does suggest that Thursday's 12th stage to Bibione will be his next prime opportunity. We've already spoken, Gregor, about Andre Greipel and how he's probably the man to beat on the stage to Bibione. What do you feel about Caleb's progress so far? And not just Caleb's progress, they've had Luka Mezcek, you know, make, I think he's made progress as his lead-out guy, and the team has also tried to use, while they're keeping resources for Chavez, they've tried to use guys like Sam Bewley and Michael Hepburn to sort of do a bit of the early muscle work to set them up. But what do you think they have to do to be able to beat Greipel? And obviously there's guys like Modolo, Nozzolo, etc. But how do you feel that they're... well, you're laughing now. What are they going to do?
Modolo, Nizzolo, yeah.
It all sounds like a pizza.
Yeah, I'll have a little Nizzolo on that, please, and hold the red sauce. Yeah, I mean, Bibione will be his next chance, and also probably his last chance with the big Alps there looming up north after that stage in Veneto. We're talking about Caleb Ewan, who I think is 21 years old, one who got a stage win in his debut Grand Tour last year at the Vuelta a España. And when you talk about these top name, the top billing sprinters, your Greipels, your Mark Cavendish, your Marcel Kittels. Only one other one has done that, and that's Marcel Kittel, and I think he did so when he was 25 already, and so if he doesn't win in this Giro d'Italia, it's not a loss for Caleb Ewan, and of course it's not a loss for the team who's come in with GC ambitions with Esteban Chavez. What it is he's gaining confidence, and he did that, he showed that the other day when Luka Mezcek took him up in the sprint, and he shot out there early and just faded as Andre Greipel, and I think Modolo whizzed by. So that last year, that stage win on that quite an uphill finish in the Vuelta a España, and I walked that last kilometer where he won that sprint last year. I think he beat Sagan, I think, in that uphill sprint. So quite impressive. He's still going to carry that confidence through this Giro d'Italia and onto the next Grand Tour, which could be the Vuelta a España, and to the other objectives he has in the season. It won't be the Tour de France, the team's confirmed. So he's going to carry that confidence through. And so what he just needs to go through the paces in these sprints and get that experience and go on and try to win some more. Even if he doesn't pull off the win, it's not a loss. It's experience. And so, yeah, it helps out. It's a positive, and it's a growing experience, and we should all keep that sort of positiveness that little Esteban Chavez has. You know, he says, you know, for him, it's just a victory to be in the Giro d'Italia, you know, and so he just, everything's positive, and that's what this is for Caleb Ewan, is a positive building experience.
Yeah, that's a lot of good points there, Gregor.
If you look at other sprinters like your Nizzolo, your Modolo, as Rupert likes to throw out the names with the N and O's, those guys, it's not building experience, especially for Sasha Modolo. He's here to win, and Sonny Cobrelli, has he gone home already? I mean, he's racing on second division Bardiani team. He's here to win. The pressure's on for those guys, and Viviani is here to win, and he was here to win because he's already been time cut and been sent home by the UCI race jury with two of his colleagues. So that's the big difference between Caleb Ewan and Viviani. Let's not build up too much pressure on little Caleb Ewan yet, who has his future ahead of him, and he's just trying to figure out what kind of haircut he wants.
That's true. We saw on the backstage pass how his hair is grown. Actually, when I was sitting in the bus with him the other day for an interview, I didn't realize how long his hair was until the backstage pass revealed that it came across like a sheepdog, you know. But I agree with you 100% there. I mean, he's only 21. It seems like he's been racing for forever, but he was so young when he was making an impression. And those Italian guys, there is a lot of pressure on those Italian guys to win. I mean, their season hinges on them getting that stage win, particularly here in the Giro, because we won't see them at the Tour. And for Caleb, there's obviously a well-defined pathway for him. But there will come a time when that pathway will change, where there will be the expectancy on him to win. But it's not today.
It's not this Tour d'Italia.
And it maybe not be this year. Maybe not next, probably towards the end of next year, I think there'll be a bit more pressure, but we'll wait for that. Aaron, what do you feel about Caleb? Because I remember you've seen him for a long time, and I still remember when we were having a chat to him back in Ballarat a couple of years ago before the Nationals, day before we went to Burrumbeat for the time trials, which he didn't do, but we had a coffee with him there. Do you think he's changed much, and how have you seen his progression?
I think that's the thing. I haven't seen a lot of other than the physical change with the hair growth, which I haven't seen. I can only imagine, because he lives in, I think, Monaco now, next to Blaine, his teammate Michael Matthews. But I've seen a lot of maturity in his riding, and of course he's always handled interviews with such great poise. And I'm not sure if that's just a product of his manager Jason Bacca, who's obviously in charge of guys like Cadet Evans and Simon Clark. So there's a lot of polish with Caleb. He's not a big outspoken person, but he's always keen to have a chat and has a good sense of humor. I want to see him do well. You guys are right. Gregor hit it right on the head. He's still, 21 years of age. He still has a lot of growing to do. But again, the team's expectations, and of course cycling fans' expectations down under, will increase with every race. And of course, it doesn't help that there's another Aussie legend out there, Robbie McEwen, who he has stated that he wants to, I think, at least surpass his win total.
I'll tell you one little thing that may be interesting, maybe not this year, but later. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Michael Matthews is off contract this year. But if he does stay with Orica Greenedge, it'll be interesting to see if the pathways with Michael Matthews and Caleb cross at all with races and ambitions. But that's maybe for another day.
Hey, while we're still talking about the Giro, I just want to say, how good is, and kind of moving off the sprinters, how good is the young Slovenian Primoz Roglic from Lotto Jumbo? I had a chance to really get to know him last year, at the Tour of Qinghai Lake when he was riding Adria Mobil, and just thought the former ski jumper just seems like a fantastic guy. And yesterday's Stage 9 individual time trial win, it just, hats off.
You know, there's an interesting story about what happened with him. He when he went to he went up to the start of the stage, and the UCI commissaires measured his bike according to rules, and they the measurements didn't correspond with the rules, so they told him so. It was 2 minutes before his start, so he took a bike off the team car. That bike, and then obviously scrambled to the start. Started. That bike didn't have a water bottle on it, so wasn't able to get a water bottle for the time trial. Also, the seat was too low, and at that point he realised that, and he actually thought to himself that, sod this, my stage chance, they've gone, So he just thought, I'm just going to ride this for the fun of it to see what I can do in torrential conditions. torrential conditions, I should say, and he ended up winning the stage. I mean, that's one of those remarkable stories. When you take the pressure off and suddenly he produces a stage-winning performance, which albeit was helped, his result was helped because of the conditions that were much worse later on.
What a ride by Rolick. He said that he used some of that same sort of ski jumping mentality to corner his way through those wet Chianti curves and make his way to Greve and Chianti, where we were at the press room just keeping warm and there in the press surroundings with our peers. And He put on a show, and he sat in that hot seat for a long, long time as the showers came through. He did not race in the rains. He used his technique as a ski jumper to go through those corners, and then the rainstorms came, of course.
Good point.
And then the rainstorms came, but he used his descending skills or his technique as a ski jumper is so that mental preparation just to go through there and keep focused and go through those curves, and then of course that paid off, holding back some of the top guys like Tom Dumoulin and Bob Jungels, who were, in all fairness, I mean, Roglic's a good rider and showed that in the opening time trial in Apeldoorn. In all fairness, those guys were held back by the rain. I mean, no one could go full out on carbon rims in those torrential conditions in the late afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. As we heard Matt White say when he was following Esteban Chavez, he, a couple of those turns, he couldn't even look. He put his head down. He wasn't driving the car, but he couldn't look.
In the sky mechanic who maybe by coincidence is also Slovenian like Roglic said, you know, look, Mikel Landa's ride took a couple of years off my life just watching him ride. He thought he was going to, you know, slide out in any of those corners and just go off disappearing in the Chianti vineyards and never to be found again.
I should say that, I mean, it was a shame for the time trial that the rain did come in like it did, you know, and not just affect the race, but it did. I mean, where we're sitting now, the sun's come out, and you can see over the hills here in Chianti, and it's just a beautiful...
I'm opening up Rupert's... Rupert has these large French doors to his room. I'm just letting in some of this fresh Chianti air into the room. So I don't know if that comes over the audio recording, but you may get a sense of that, sense of the Chianti vineyards through the audio.
Yeah, it's a beautiful scenery here, and if only the conditions we've got now were prevailing yesterday, because, you know, it's a shame for the local area that what would have been an absolutely beautiful stage, as exciting as it was, wasn't as beautiful as it could have been. Aaron, so any last words you'd like to have to say about our ski jumping friend?
Well, no, just other than the fact that, you know, as we were talking about, the multi-sport athlete, you and I, Rupe, you know, we're quite fond of multi-sport athletes.
We certainly are. We do diversify, and, you know, as a matter of fact, that's probably a nice little segue to our next little subject, which we're going to talk about a multi-sport athlete who doesn't ride a bike yet, but you never know. He could end up taking up cycling and trying to win the Tour de France. His name is Jarryd Hayne, the former... Now I have to list a number of sports. Former NRL rugby league player, former NFL player, soon to be rugby sevens player, and you never know, as I said, he could become a Tour de France rider. But we don't know that. That was just me speculating the last one. But I know a lot of people are also speculating that, because Jarryd Hayne, who made the headlines in Australia week in, week out, actually day in, day out for so long in his pursuit of trying to get a contract at the... we had a contract to get a starting position at the San Francisco 49ers, has this week announced his decision to quit the 49ers and NFL football to pursue an opportunity to play for the Fiji Rugby Sevens sides at the Olympic Games in Rio. We're going to come back after the break to talk about this, because it really is he's a phenomenal athlete, and but the challenges that are facing him to get into the team for Fiji in this discipline, I think, may be underestimated by a lot of people, certainly those who believe that Jarryd Hayne should be playing there. But anyway, we'll talk about that after the break. Aaron, can you just sort of put that hand back into the LP collection and come up with something nice for us to sort of get our breath back? And we'll come back after the break and talk about Jarryd Hayne. Well, you're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. Now, we're going to have a little bit of a shift in pace and direction. As we alluded before the break, we're going to talk about Jared Hayne, the former rugby league player from the Parramatta Eels, who went off to pursue a career in the NFL with the San Francisco 49ers. And just this week he announced that he's going to leave the 49ers, or he has left the 49ers, to pursue another opportunity to play for Fiji in the Rugby Sevens at the Olympic Games in Rio this year. Now, there's been a lot of conjecture, as there has been with every move Jared Hayne has made, as to whether his next move is feasible or not, whether he can do it or not. And by no surprise, a lot of people have come out to say, this is ridiculous. He can't do it. He can't play Rugby Sevens with 2 months to go before the Olympic Games, because they say the game of Rugby Sevens is completely different in pace and tactics and everything else than what he has experienced in the certainly with the NFL, where there's much more, requirement to have a short and sharp speed for impact, and certainly with rugby union, with 15-side game, and also rugby league, a 13-side game. In rugby sevens, it's very much a game which is you have to be the endurance athlete to be able to run at pace. There's no room for stopping, and a lot of people are saying that this is something that he will not have, he will not be able to develop that pace and speed and endurance with 2 months to go, and also the tactical nuances of rugby sevens. Aaron S. Lee, have you? How much of this story has made an impact in the States? And just what's your feel about what Jared Hayne can do or not? Because I know from you living in Australia, you know about rugby league and rugby union, but you also know about the challenges of multi-sport and athletes shifting from one to the other.
Well, first and foremost, I think he's living the dream that we all have as children, whether it be young boys or young girls, and that's to play every sport at the highest level and to achieve things. And I think the fact that, look, he had a handful of carries in the NFL and maybe double that in yardage. He didn't have a chance to score a touchdown, which is a bit disappointing, I think, for his Palmeiras as he looks back later on. But the fact that he made an NFL roster coming from a completely different code and not having played the game his entire life is pretty phenomenal, to be honest. I think the majority of the headlines that I've seen have come from obviously, Australian headlines. It hasn't made as big an impact here in the U.S. as did his tryout a year ago. But, of course, he has played a bit of a role in the San Francisco 49er community in Northern California, because he'd become a bit of a cult hero, I believe. But, chapeau to Jared Hayne, and he's living the dream.
Yeah, look, I sort of agree with you. I sort of think, and it's also his life to lead at the end of the day. I mean, if he doesn't succeed in making the team, I'm sure there'll be plenty of opportunities for him with his sporting career, whether it's in rugby league or whether it's in rugby union. I mean, there's rugby union over in Europe, I'm sure there'll be a lot of opportunities for him. And in some ways, I guess it sort of adds a bit of polish to the significance of the Olympics. I mean, I know in this day and age, it's easy to be cynical about the Olympics with so many issues of corruption, dope, or alleged corruption and doping, etc. Sort of not actually sort of mirroring what the original ethos of the Olympics was about fair play and competition. And suddenly you've got a guy who's willing to not throw everything away, but willing to make a massive shift and put everything aside to try and make an Olympic dream real. And so I sort of admire that. But at the same time, I do believe it's going to be extremely challenging. If he had more time, I would believe he could do it. But I just think 2 months to go, when you're actually at the selection phase of your finite squad for the Olympics, not just the squad they might have had for World Cup events a year ago. So it's going to be a very contentious issue, because if he gets in, there's going to be someone who's missed out. Fiji arguably the best with the New Zealand team in Rugby World Sevens. And it's going to be a massive, massive story, whatever happens. happens. And if he gets in, I do feel for the person who doesn't get in. And I hope if he does get in, it's for the right reasons and not just for the headlining reasons or whatever. You know, say, for example, someone could say that maybe if Jared Haynes in the Fiji team, they can bring in extra sponsors. There's a massive sponsor there to support Rugby Sevens in Fiji. I hope it's just on athletic ability and also what he brings to the team as a person.
Well, I'm sure you're spot on that, Rib. I'm sure that there is a bit of media exposure and promotional and commercial elements to his signing. I do know that there has been rumors here for the past 4 months in the U.S. that he may not return. He was a pet project, I believe, of the last coaching regime for the 49ers, Jim Tomasula and his staff, who are no longer with the team. So I think it's been a bit doubtful if the new coaching staff would want to put the time and to continue to develop Jared Haynes as an athlete. But I'll say this, as far as athletic merit alone goes, I don't care if he has 2 days to get ready for the Olympics in Rugby 7. At 6'2", 225 pounds, he is a steaming locomotive, and I would hate to get in his way.
Well, I'd love to see that if it did happen. With all jest, but hey, speaking of multi-sport and switching, now a lot's been happening in the world of triathlon. We do say we are the show about swim, bike and run. Aaron, what's been happening in triathlon from an Australian point of view, but also we're getting to the Olympics, so there's a lot happening around the world with, I understand, you know, in the US with what's happening with their selections as well.
Well, of course, over the weekend, the Woodlands Ironman North America, Ironman Texas was the North American Championships, and a couple of Germans, Patrick Lange and Julia Gager, both took out the elite men and women's fields, respectively. But going back to the Olympic side of things, it was also the ITU World Triathlon Series in Yokohama. Gwen Jorgensen returned back to form. She was beaten last month for the first time in, I think, 14, 15 races. Of course, she has already solidified. She's a world champion and already solidified her spot in Rio. For the American women, the other American racers on the women's and men's side still a little bit in limbo, as are some of the women for Australia. Of course, Emma Moffat, who's made history. She's going to be a three-time Olympian in the sport of triathlon from Australia. I did a story on her for Triathlete Magazine on triathlete.com, a little cheap plug there, that should be coming out. I think it just hit newsstands. And then, so she's already punched her ticket. And Ashley Gentle finished second, right behind women. Most probably punched hers now, as well as Wollongong Wizard Charlotte McShane there, who finished fifth overall. So it looks like we may have our 1-2-3 for the Australian women. As far as the men go, obviously we've known that Aaron Royal solidified his tickets last year, Rio qualifiers in August. Ryan Bailey punched his ticket 2 months ago. Just did a story on him for the 220 triathlon. Again, cheap plug. And over the weekend, Jake Burtwistle, who I believe he's a Wollongong Wizard too, Roop. He finished fourth. So it looks like we have our three for the men as well. So it's going to be interesting times now in the lead-up. You know, you and I talked earlier this year that there didn't seem to be as much buzz surrounding the Olympics, and it seems to get less and less each year. So, of course, going back to news like Jared Haynes making the selection to go there and or the decision to go to the Olympics or try for it, I think it's good for the sport. I'd like to see the Olympics return to its past glory.
Yeah, well, we could only hope so. What do you feel about the Australian team with medal chances, or is competition at that top level so tight you can't actually predict medals? But
well, I mean, you know, we just saw Ashley Gentle go second to Gwen Jorgensen, who's a odds-on favorite, obviously, to win a gold medal. She finished maybe about 80 seconds, or excuse me, 40 seconds, I hate to say, 40 seconds behind Jorgensen. So on a given day, anyone can win. Yokohama had a tough field, and of course we saw Burtwistle finish fourth to Mario Mola, who's going to from Spain, who's going to be obviously a favorite for the Olympics in Rio as well. As a whole, I do not see the Australians placing on the podium, either the men or the women, but I do see this as a setup year for 2020 in Tokyo. As far as the Americans go, obviously Gwen Jorgensen is just a step step ahead. She is where the Annalise were for the women's side, you know, four years ago.
That's really interesting. And just while we're on the topic of multi-sport and cross-sport, etc., just here at the Giro d'Italia, Dimension Data, the South African team, they had a special guest visitor this last week, Victor Matfield, Springbok rugby legend. He was with the team, and he spent a day with the team, and I was talking to Doug Ryder about that, and he was mightily impressed, not just by the athletic performance, but apparently he was pretty taken back by the, say, accommodation standards for cycling teams here. Having covered rugby myself, I know that the rugby teams, particularly if you're on a Springbok side and you're a legend like Victor Matfield, you're used to staying in five-star hotels, etc. And he was pretty surprised when he went back to the Dimension Data Hotel and saw them, I'll make it modest, but I'll be fair to the hotel, they were staying in modest accommodation, so to speak. And Gregor's chipping in here.
He should see some of the hotels we stay in and where we're staying tonight. Rupert, this bed here does not look fit for more than a one night stay, and yet we're gonna try to do two nights here.
Well, sometimes Gregor, you got to make you have to dig in, don't you, so to speak. But it was interesting. It was interesting hearing that rugby perspective.
Yeah, well, you got to be limited out of lemonade. Hey, listen, I got to say though, I've seen some photos from Gregor. There was a photo of a boudoir bedroom maybe two nights ago that looked, I got to tell you, it looked pretty five star in Manhattan.
Look, that was just some hotel that he wandered into, you know.
They kicked me out of that room shortly after I took the photo, Aaron. As you know, we stay only in budget accommodations and share rooms and survive on bread and water here in the Giro d'Italia.
Even in Chianti, we do.
Paint that bad picture for the folks back home who are obviously very envious.
Okay, look, we're going to take one last little break here, and then we're going to come back to wrap up the show. Aaron, find us a nice little tune, and then we're going to come back to wrap up the show of what is called What a Ride.
Straight. She turns herself around and she
Well, you're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee and our special guest, Gregor Brown.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I mean, it's been a ride for me as well, Rupert.
Gregor, please, I'm the host. Please let me introduce you. Be polite. No, Gregor, thanks for being on the show, mate. Aaron, we've just lost Aaron in space.
Lovely Rick Van Slick, he was playing there. He has an extensive LP selection, and he pulled that one out of the bag for us.
Yes, well, we just hoped that was Rick Van Slick-esque, I would say.
Yes.
Because the Rick Van Slick and the Quick Steps don't exist yet, but maybe we'll see them soon. Hey, look, we're just going to do a little wrap now. We're getting into the second week. What do you predict and what do you hope for in the second week?
Already, I don't know if this audio is going to be online by the time we see the stage tomorrow, but I mean, to Sestela tomorrow, it could get crazy. I mean, I think we could see if Gianluca Brambilla maybe possibly lose his pink jersey because there's a little uphill kick to the line. We have some mixed stages coming all the way through to Bibione, which is a sprint stage, and then after that, it goes crazy with some high mountain Alps. So I think what we can see is some real racing and people trying to take opportunities in these next days to try to get some time and gain some seconds, like we saw the day Diego Lisi won.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to go to that one because there was that steep 18% climb, which Esteban Chavez said was steeper than 18% at its maximum peak, but it wasn't even categorized on the race book. But what I've loved about this Giro so far is that the GC contenders are willing to take every opportunity that comes. It's not just waiting for the marquee stages or the marquee mountains. If there's a little hill or a corner, they'll take it.
We had dinner last night with Mauro Vigna and some of his friends, and what Vinny's done is he's given the canvas and the colors for the riders to create these sort of paintings and these beautiful pictures that we're seeing by having these stages. The other day to Arezzo and the stage Ulisi won with some of those small mountains in there, where it could be a day where the group stays together or an escape wins, or it could be a day where if one wants to try, one can blow apart the race, like we saw Valverde ditch Tom Dumoulin and ditch Jakob Fuglsang, and 2012 winner Ryder Hazeldal.
Exactly, and Mauro Vigna being the race director of the Giro d'Italia, and I think, you know, full credit to him for, I think, so far designing a course which has covered a lot of terrain. When you think we've gone from Netherlands down to the south of Italy, right to the boot, and we've come up through the spine, and we're in Chianti and Tuscany, and the best is still to come. I think it's been a fantastic route, and I love the fact that the peloton have actually embraced it. They've taken every opportunity that's come, and that's what Grand Tour racing is about. Gregor Brown, thanks for being on the show once again. And all I can say to our listeners is I hope you've enjoyed this episode of What a Ride. There'll be more to come. This Giro has only just really started when you think about it, and I'm just looking forward to it. And to all of you out there, just stay safe and stay upright, and don't forget, a meter matters. That's the most important thing. We love our cycling, but we want to stay safe. Goodbye for now.
and lonely. You, strangers, angels, dancing in the deepest ocean, twisting in the water. You're just like a dream, just like a dream. Lift me into shape.